I'm Kevin Kelly. This program is live and local, and theater is our focus today. On the first half of the program, we will have members of Prairie Fire Theater's production of Gilbert and Sullivan's The Gondoliers, which is going to be in Normal, Illinois, and then a conversation with the director and one of the cast members of Bleacher Bums, a comedy set on the bleachers of Chicago's Wrigley Field. That's the later part of the show. It's all in live and local today here on FM 90.9. That was a performance by the Scottish Chamber Orchestra led by Alexander Ferris of the overture to Gilbert and Sullivan's operetta, The Gondoliers, which happens to be our topic on Live and Local today for this portion of the show. I'm Kevin Kelly. This program is your connection to local music and theater. And the Prairie Fire Theater Group is going to be performing The Gondoliers coming up rather soon. And we have a number of their ensemble members and to their directors on the show with us, and also their keyboardist. Gondoliers opens on the 7th of August. It runs through the 16th at Presser Hall on the campus of Illinois Wesleyan University in Normal. And if you missed Let's Misbehave of Cole Porter, well, too bad. You did indeed miss it, but that was the first of their shows for this season. And later on, the rocking 60s musical, they call it, called Suds. That's going to be in October, and no doubt we'll hear about that later on as well. Our guests in the studio are director Dawn Harris and Bob Mangialardi, who is the artistic director for Prairie Fire Theater, and Dawn specifically director for this production, and also in roles who will, as they will introduce themselves as they go. Jeremy Fisher is with us, Case Carvel, making sure I get everybody's names right. Allison Wall is, we'll find out what role she is in. And Amelia Siski, Corbin Dixon, and the pianist here is Sarah Cushman as well. I think I hit up everybody. So thanks, everybody, for coming in today. Looking forward to hearing some of this fun music. It's a fun show. Dawn is director of the show. You've done a lot of Gilbert and Sullivan. What appeals to you about Gilbert and Sullivan generally?
Oh, wow. I was practically raised on Gilbert and Sullivan at an early age of about, I think, 17. Yes, I turned 18 while I was one of the singers at Ohio Light Opera. And I think I have done every Gilbert and Sullivan operetta, 14 of them. Some of them many times. I've done all the soprano roles, some of the mezzo roles, and now I'm beginning to direct them all because I want to carry on the traditions that I've learned. But I just love the upbeat nature of it, the comedy, and yet, being a classical singer myself, the music lends itself to beautiful singing. And I don't know, you just get a little bit of everything. You can dance as a singer, which we don't normally have the chance of doing in some of the grander operas. So I just love the feel of it, and I love operetta in general, and particularly these from Great Britain.
No, that just opened a whole nother topic. These from Great Britain, meaning specifically Gilbert and Sullivan, or Great Britain's operettas? Are there others?
Oh, yeah, there's Edward German, just to name one of them, and there are some others. But, I mean, these two, dubbed the Victorian duo, really were, they represent comic opera. They call their operettas, if you will, comic operas, just as a distinction.
Although operetta itself is a term that usually is synonymous with comedy in opera.
This is true.
More or less.
This is true. It's, you know, the precursor to the American musical theater as we know it. So it has comic elements. It has dialogue, of course, which we're going to hear a little bit of shortly. And, it's light in nature. There's only a couple of them that end tragically. In fact, there's only one that Gilbert and Sullivan wrote, Yeoman of the Guard, that ends with the Patter Man actually collapsing and dying of a broken heart.
But he doesn't. It seems like he ought to die in the middle of doing one of those patter songs.
it's killed several.
Yeah, well, many of them have practically died.
Which is not meant to be a jinx for anybody in this production, by the way. On Monday, my guest on this show was Steve Fiol from Millikan University, and we actually were talking a good deal about some of the differences between musical theater and opera, because the department at Millikan is called Department of Lyric Theater, which is actually probably the best overall term. If you were to be able to say the difference between or the progression from music theater, operetta, opera, how would you do that if you can?
Oh, wow. It really all began with Gaetano Donizetti with his comic operas. He set the tone, and it just evolved through Offenbach and the French opera comique. And then every nation had its own version. You know, you have Lehar, and you have Johann Strauss, and you have Gilbert and Sullivan in England, and of course I just said Offenbach. But it all came to this country by means of Romberg and Herbert. And then we get into Kern with Showboat, and then you go. You just go to present day. So that's how I see the progression of opera to musical theater, historically speaking.
Well, actually, it seems like between music theater and operetta, there's a grayer area than between either the other two and opera, in that generally operetta and music theater have a fair amount of dialogue. Usually
yes.
Opera has dialogue, but it's all sung.
Right. Exactly.
But other than that, how would you distinguish the modern musical theater from operetta? And does anybody even write operettas anymore?
Not too much. I mean, you're going to get something like Light in the Piazza, which, and, you know, Sweeney Todd, where it's more, you know, difficult music, I would say, and would need a more trained singer. That's how I distinguish it. Is that the musical theater singer has different techniques, and it's not such a heavy load vocally. You know, the demands aren't as wide. I mean, you're going to hear these singers today singing high notes, B-flats, high Cs, whatnot, as they would in grand opera. So these students are our opera students, and so it just naturally falls that they could do this operetta too. However, when Gilbert and Sullivan wrote these, they wrote them for the actors in town, the patter role and the comic roles. The only two roles that typically are the trained singers are the lead ingenue soprano and the tenor.
Bob Mangiolardi looks like he's chomping to say something about all this.
He wants to say
here.
Something.
Oh, wow. Well, that was what amazed me when we first started doing these, and I started to kind of listen to some of the d'Oyly-Carte recordings, where that, you know, the performers were not really that great as singers. I mean, we really tend to cast really great singers, and I think you'll hear some really fine singers today, but they weren't, you know, we go to music school and we learn how to sing, and they weren't really that outstanding of voices, and you heard kind of their acting chops. You heard that these guys were really skilled, and these women were really skilled in terms of comedy and inflection and character, and not so much, you know, beautiful voices. And so that really, really amazed me. And the more we've done it, the more I realize how versatile you have to be to sing Gilbert and Sullivan. You have to, if you only have a great voice, you're not going to quite make it. And yet, if you don't sing well, you're not going to quite make it either. So you really have to be able to combine the two, a great flair for the stage and acting in comedy, as well as some really serious chops and technique to be able to sing all the demanding stuff.
Well, now that they have set the bar impossibly high for all of you, Who's starting with what?
Okay, we're going to begin with the two gondoliers. They are the stars of the beginning of the show. This operetta is unique in the Gilbert and Sullivan repertoire in that it almost has two little mini operas that coincide within the big scope of the piece. And so they are part of this first little mini opera. They have come on stage. They're going to choose two brides. And I want to add that Bob Mangiolardi really came up with this idea, and I'm taking it and running with it. We are setting this piece, modern day, Act One, in the Venetian Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, because, as you know, there are gondoliers there.
I didn't know that. But
you didn't know that? Well, you got to go to Vegas, Kevin.
And they have a canal, and it's obviously supposed to look like Venice.
I was to Vegas once. That was more than enough, as far as I was concerned.
It's an acquired taste.
Well, from Prairie Fire Theater's production of The Gondoliers, coming up in August, here are, in the roles of Marco and Giuseppe Palmieri, I think in this order, Jeremy Fisher and Case Carvel, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9.
But that's a baguette, it's quite honorary, the train that we buy. For gallantry noted, since we were short-coated, to beauty devoted, to Marco and I. When morning is breaking, our couches forsaking, to greet their awaking, with carols we come. At summer day's nooning, when weary lagooning, our mandolins tuning, lazily drumming, our mandolins tuning, we lazily strum. Our mandolins tuning, we lazily drum. Vespers are ringing to hope ever clinging, with songs of our singing a vigil we keep. When daylight is fading and wrapped in night shading, with soft serenading we sing them to sleep. Soft serenading, we sing them to sleep.
We're gondolieri, parlezza vagheri. Gondolieri, gondolieri, tra-la-la-la-la, tra-la-la-la-la-la. Gondolieri, gondolieri, tra-la-la-la-la, 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 tra-la-la-la-la.
Wonderful job, gentlemen. Jeremy Fisher as Marco Palmieri, Case Carvel as Giuseppe Palmieri. I assume you guys are brothers. Is that the idea?
Show.
Yeah, that was the implication there. With Sarah Cushman at the keyboard, all of them from Prairie Fire Theater's production of Gilbert and Sullivan's The Gondoliers, which opens on the 7th of August at Illinois Wesleyan University. If you'd like more information, their web address is prairiefiretheater.org, and they, like everybody else around here, likes the affectation of R-E, which personally bugs me, but that's a whole other topic. or you can get tickets at Ticketmaster, which is 800-982-2787. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our programs today are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, inviting audiences to explore the newly announced 2009-2010 season. Tickets are on sale now. More information is at krannertcenter.com. Coming up a little later on the program, I'll have a calendar of other events for you to go see and hear in our listening area. And also later on the show, at about 12:45 or so, 12:40, conversation about a comedy production in Champaign called Bleacher Bums, for which one of our guests will be the consummate Chicago Cubs fan who was intimately related to WILL, and we'll hear about that later on. The cast members here, at least that you've brought along, Don and Bob, are representing different universities around town, either, and actually one who is going to be attending a northern school, my alma mater, by the way, University of Illinois. Jeremy and Case, both either at or just finished at the U of I, and Allison Wall, who we'll be hearing from in a little bit, going into Northwestern master's program there. Amelia Siski just finished in vocal performance at Illinois Wesleyan, so you're going to be on your home turf, at least school turf for this. And Corbin Dixon, who is in the music theater program at the University of Illinois, which, Dawn, you're the director of. Mm-hmm. And that's a new effort here at the university, relatively, isn't it?
Yeah, I think when Ron Hedlund was the head of the department, he had established it back in the 80s, but then it lay dormant for years. And then when I came in, they said, hey, Dawn, you know, let's get this going again. And it basically services our vocal performance majors or music ed majors that really want to go that direction with the musical theater side of vocal training. And so it is basically a music degree, and the students do not take diction or languages, foreign languages. Instead, they take a core amount of acting courses and dance courses. So Corbin's in one of the first couple years of this program, and I think I just graduated my first one last year. Wow.
Congratulations.
One of them made it through.
So, Corbin, how do you deal with the dance element?
Oh, that's not till next semester.
So. Oh.
Okay, I'll let you know.
So we shouldn't have high expectations for your dance in this particular production, or don't you have to do it?
There's a little hopping, and it's not the best. We're working on it.
But you can hop.
I can. It's the dyslexia getting left and right.
And you're going to be what year in school here?
I'll be a sophomore.
So you've had 1 year in the program.
I have.
And I got to work with Corbin in Les Miserables a few years ago.
All right.
Playing the role of Marius. Mm-hmm. Marius, I saw the video for that recently after seeing the Champaign-Urbana Theater's most recent production of that, their student production. And what do you think you have learned from Dawn and company in your first year, now that you're sort of studying this diligently as opposed to practicing it as a high school kid?
It's definitely a different kind of world. It's a bigger pond, which I think is an adjustment for anybody going into a college setting, moving from a more high school setting when you're used to kind of getting big parts and then going back to being a little fish again. But it's a great program. It's nice to actually kind of focus more on technique and vocal health, opposed to many of the other music theater programs I was looking at that were much more acting focused. And not so focused on the singer and vocal health, which was important to me.
Dawn, you mentioned that they don't, in the music theater program at the University of Illinois, they don't necessarily have to take diction, though I assume they may.
Yes,
And yet, in Gilbert and Sullivan, diction, really is pretty paramount, particularly for patter kinds of songs, but even like what you just sang there, if that diction had been lost, the song is gone.
Exactly. Oh, yes, we will be taking English diction, if you haven't already. That's right, Corbin had it. So we're going to be listening to your diction, Corbin.
Oh, is that a setup for his song
yes,
to be
I
next then?
Yes, I think this is a good setup for the next piece.
Which is what?
Well, these two characters represent the other little mini opera, if you will, in the Gondoliers, and they happen to be, Amelia plays Casilda, the daughter of the Duke and Duchess of Plaza Toro, who, by the way, they have fallen on hard times financially. They've come to the Venetian Hotel to find out Who is married to their daughter. It's a long story. You'll have to come just to find out what's going on. But in short, Casilda was married when she was a baby to the infant heir to the throne of Barataria. And it's a small country. It's an island south of Spain, a fictitious country that Gilbert dreamed up. So this duet is the daughter, and actually in our production, Louise, the tenor, is like a bodyguard for the family. Well, when mom and dad leave, these two run in each other's arms and declare their love. They have to keep it secret away from the parents because he's just a menial, you know, and she's a high-born lady. So they've acted very mean to each other before this scene. So it's cute. It's one of Gilbert's topsy-turvy moments where they have actually hate each other, and now everyone's off stage and they run into each other's arms. So they are going to sing "Oh Rapture" when alone together.
This is from Gilbert and Sullivan's The Gondoliers, Prairie Fire Theater's production here on Live and Local.
Should they tear them?
Necessity, invention's mother, compelled me to a course of feigning. But left alone with one another, I will atone for my disdaining. All will be loving. Mine angry
disdain, it gives no pain. 'Tis mercy played in masquerade. Oh, well beloved.
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 Nothing. I trust that you will never have reason to repent.
Nay, Louise, it may not be. I have embraced you for the last time.
Casilda?
I have just learnt, to my surprise and indignation, that I was wed in babyhood to the infant son of the King of Barataria.
The son of the King of Barataria? The child who was stolen in infancy by the Inquisition?
The same, but of course you know his story.
Know his story? Why, I've often told you that my mother was the nurse to whose charge he was entrusted.
True, I had forgotten. Well, he has been discovered, and my father has brought me here to claim his hand.
But you will not recognize this marriage. It took place when you were too young to understand its import.
Nay, Louise, respect my principles and cease to torture me with vain entreaties. Henceforth, my life is another's.
But stay. The present and the future, they are another's. But the past, that at least is ours, and none can take it from us. As we may revel in naught else, let us revel in that.
I don't think I grasp your meaning.
Yet it is logical enough. You say you cease to love me.
I say I may not love you.
Ah, but you did not say you do not love me.
I loved you with a frenzy that words are powerless to express. And that but 10 brief minutes since.
Exactly. My own, that is, until 10 minutes since, my own. My lately loved, my recently adored, tell me that until, well, say a quarter of an hour ago, I was all in all to thee.
I see your idea. It's ingenious, but don't do that.
There can be no harm in reveling in the past.
None whatever, but an embrace cannot be taken to act retrospectively.
Perhaps not.
We may recollect an embrace. I recollect many, but we must not repeat them.
Then let us recollect in a few. Oh, Casilda, you were to me as the sun is to the earth.
A quarter of an hour ago.
About that.
And to think that, but for this miserable discovery, you would have been my own for life.
Through life and death, a quarter of an hour ago.
How greedily my thirsty ears would have drunk the golden melody of those sweet words a quarter. Well, now it is about 20 minutes since.
About that. In such a matter, one cannot be too precise.
And now our love, so full of life, is but a silent, solemn memory.
Must it be so, Casilda?
Louise, it must be so.
And so, I think you have to have a roadmap to any Gilbert and Sullivan plot, much less all the little machinations that go on in between. We heard Corbin Dixon in the role of Luis, the attendant of the Duke of Plaza Toro. I think GNS must have a wonderful time making up some of these wonderful names. And also Amelia Siski as, Janetta. Oh, no, Casilda, the daughter of said the Duchess. You must be the daughter then of the Duke also, I presume.
Yes, it's both of them.
Yes, Duke and Duchess. Both of them representing Prairie Fire Theater's production of Gilbert and Sullivan's The Gondoliers, opening on the 7th of August on the Illinois Wesleyan University campus in Normal. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. We're pleased to welcome these cast members and directors and keyboardist, Sarah Cushman, to the show today. WILO's programs are made possible in part with support from Carl Foundation Hospital. Dr. Yuritz Oliphant discusses preconditions for bariatric surgery candidates Friday, July 31st at 7 p.m. at the Mills Breast Cancer Institute. Registration is at carl.org/bariatric-event. I don't want to run out of time before you all get to sing your songs, so why don't we set up whoever is going to be next.
Okay.
Dawn Harris is the director of the show.
Yes, next we're going to hear Allison Wall sing the role of Janetta, and she happens to be the wife of Marco, Jeremy Fisher. And in fact, in real life, I just have to throw this in there, they're girlfriend and boyfriend, so it's so cute.
Aw, isn't that sweet? So why don't they have a duet together then?
You know,
They'll have to come to the show for that.
Yes.
Do they have one in the show?
No, not necessarily a duet alone, but they're in many, many quartets.
And they probably have backstage duets.
Oh, yes.
All kinds of
yeah,
stuff.
Which we don't want to know.
I do. Our listeners, I'm sure, are intrigued.
Okay, she's going to sing Kind Sir, You Cannot Have the Heart. She's singing to the Grand Inquisitor because the Grand Inquisitor just informed the gondoliers and their wives that the kings have to leave immediately for Barataria and they cannot take their wives with them.
And that's tragic.
It is.
Kind sir, you cannot have the heart our lives to part from those to whom an hour ago we were united. Before our flowing hopes you stem, a look at them and pause before you deal this blow all uninvited. You men can never understand that heart and hand cannot be separated when we go. You burn.
Alison Wall, and yes, there's applause. Go right ahead. You're allowed. I'm sure the audience would like to do the same. Alison Wall in the role of Gianetta the Contadina, performing here on Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly, and coming up in a few minutes, I'll have a calendar for you of music and theater events you can go see and hear, and then a conversation with a couple of people involved in Bah Humbug Productions, production of Bleacher Bums, happening at Mike and Molly's in downtown Champaign, coming up also rather soon. Prairie Fire Theater's production of The Gondoliers of Gilbert and Sullivan begins on the 7th of August. Bob Mangiolardi, you're the artistic director of Prairie Fire Theater. Give us an overview of the theater company and what's its mission and how long has it been around?
Oh, boy.
You have two minutes.
In 40 minutes, 40 minutes or less. Okay. This is our 11th year, and so we're pretty happy about that. And it has the goals were twofold, I guess. One was just to be able to produce, perform music theater that took really good singing. I'm a singer. I teach singing at Illinois Wesleyan University. I was a performer for about 3 years before I started teaching, and I wanted just be able to have my family and kids in town and be able to perform as well when I wanted to. So that was the first thing. And also, I firmly believe that if I could pay people to perform, I wanted to be able to do that. I was paid for those 3 years that I was performing, and I thought that I could get the best kinds of performers and expect the most from them if I could pay them something. And so we've been able to do that pretty much consistently through our 11 years. A little bit of it was a niche thing where in my community there wasn't anything like this anybody that was doing opera, operetta, or music theater that really had entailed fine singing, so I wanted to do that as well. And we've been able to do that for 11 years.
And you've always had Gilbert and Sullivan.
Well, pretty much from the beginning. Part of the Gilbert and Sullivan, I hadn't done much myself, but Dawn and I were teaching together at Wesleyan, and she kind of exposed me to it somewhat, and I kind of grew to like it through her eyes. But I mean, I've sung opera too, and I like that as well. But it's in terms of an audience, it's just an easier sell, something a little bit lighter than opera in general. You know what I mean? It's just a smaller amount of audience will come out to see opera, whereas with something that's a little bit lighter, a little more fun, we can draw from a larger audience, which helps us to support that down the road. We'll hopefully branch out and do some other types of operetta sometime, but pretty much we've done six different Gilbert and Sullivan, seven actually if we count Cox and Box, mm-hmm. and we've repeated two. So of the 11 years, we've done Gilbert and Sullivan nine of those years.
And how are you doing?
Well, we're doing fine. This is a challenging year, as you know, for almost every arts group. And businesses in general.
That's why I asked the question, because you know everybody's having a struggle.
Right, right. Well, I wouldn't say we're quite to the struggle level, but we're tightening our belts a little bit this year, and conserving where we can. And so far, so good. So we had the show that we just closed last weekend did very well, and I'm excited about this.
Cole Porter's Misbehave. You directed that?
No, I didn't. I didn't direct it, but I brought a friend of mine, and I had seen this production in Milwaukee. And really, just really, really liked it. And I thought it'd be perfect for our group. And actually, had some people from Champaign that came. Also, Guy Little from the Little Theater on the Square actually came too. You're probably familiar with that company.
I am.
So anyway, we had some people from out of town. And anyway, that's kind of where we are. And it's great to be at 11 years. And it's great to have caliber of singers that are as talented as this group.
Good. Well, let's have one more song. That's what we have time for. So what shall it be, Dawn Harris?
Okay, well, you mentioned the patter songs of Gilbert and Sullivan earlier.
Do we get one?
Yeah, somewhat of one. This comes about as close as you can get to a patter song. And this opera, just a little side note, they didn't put one in because their usual patter man was not available for this production when they were writing The Gondoliers. But this is Giuseppe, the other brother from the same mother, doing Rising Early in the Morning. So this is him discussing his daily routine as a monarch.
Rising early in the morning, we proceed to light the fire, and our majesty adorning in its workaday attire, we embark without delay on the duties of the day. First we polish off some batches of political dispatches and foreign politicians circumvent. Then if business isn't heavy, we may hold a royal levy or ratify some acts of parliament. Then we probably review the household troops with their usual shallow humps and shallow whoops. Then receive with ceremonial and state an interesting Eastern potentate. After that, we probably go and dress our private valet. It's a rather nervous duty, it's a touchy little man. Write some letters literary for our private secretary. He is shaky in his spelling, so we help him if we can. I before E, that in view of craving dinner, we go down and order dinner. Then we polish the regalia and the coronation plate. Spend an hour in titivating all our gentlemen in waiting while we run our little errands for the ministers of state. Oh, philosophers may sing of the troubles of a king, but the duties are delightful and the privilege is great, and the culminating pleasure that we treasure beyond measure is to run our little errand for the ministers of state.
And we heard Case Carvel in the role of Giuseppe Palmieri, right?
Yes.
And if we had a few more minutes, I would ask how one memorizes all of those patter-like songs.
Start early.
Yeah. Well, that's actually a good rule for any performer, and how many of us actually follow it. Well, thank you very much to everybody involved in this production of The Gondoliers, Gilbert and Sullivan from Prairie Fire Theater, for coming in today. And you were pointing at something.
The telephone number for tickets.
I was about to get there.
Good.
Which is Ticketmaster, right?
Thank you. Yes.
Ticketmaster number 800-982-2787. And if you want the complete schedule and more information about Prairie Fire Theater, it is simply prairiefiretheater.org. Don Harris is director of this production. Robert Mangialardi is the artistic director of Prairie Fire Theater. Our guests today, singers, include Jeremy Fisher, Case Carvel, Allison Wall, Amelia Siski, and Corbin Dixon, and pianist Sarah Cushman. Did I miss anybody? Thank you all very much for coming on to Live and Local here on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Colonel Bogey March here on Live and Local, a performance by the Boston Pops Orchestra led by Arthur Fiedler. This is WYL FM and HD Urbana. I'm Kevin Kelly. And here is a rundown of some of the theater and music events you can go see and hear in this area, your area. The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas opens at the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan. Two performances today, one of them coming up shortly at 2 o'clock. There's also one at 8 o'clock tonight. The Peoria Municipal Band is performing on the Peoria Riverfront, a free concert tonight at 7:30. Richard III opens at the Illinois Shakespeare Festival at Ewing Manor in Normal. That's at 7:30 tonight. Also, Midsummer Night's Dream tomorrow night at 7:30. And the play called Scapin is at the Shakespeare Festival Friday night at 8 o'clock. Tomorrow, it's Absurd Person Singular, put on by the Celebration Company at the Station Theater in Urbana. That's at 8 o'clock and runs through the weekend and the next couple of weeks as well. And the Sound of Music is being put on by the Urbana Park District Youth Summer Theater. We had some of those folks on the show yesterday. That's going to be at the Follinger Auditorium on the University of Illinois Quad in Urbana. That's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at 7:30 in the evening. A free program tomorrow at noon, part of the music series at the Mills Breast Cancer Institute on the Carl Clinic's main campus in Urbana. A program called Anything You Can Sing, I Can Sing, with tenor Jason Morgan and soprano Nicole Brance. And those are just some of the events today and tomorrow. Among those, you can go see this weekend, starting on Friday and also Saturday performance, it's Bah Humbug Productions' presentation of a play called Bleacher Bums. It's going to be at Mike and Molly's Beer Garden in downtown Champaign. And we have with us two gentlemen who happen to be radio professionals. And well, one of them in particular.
That's a stretch.
Yeah. Oh, hardly. Longtime fans of WYLO Radio will know both of these voices. Les Schulte is the corporate support director for WYLL, and he happens to be the director of this production and also an alum as the cast member.
I've pretty much done it all with this particular show over the years.
And Dan Simeone, longtime station manager and doer of just about everything else that ever needs to be done on radio here at WYLL, and retired twice from WYLL. And is back for this encore presentation or encore conversation. And he gets to be in the production. Dan, is this your first theatrical performance or not?
Well, it's the first time that I've done anything around here. And actually, it's sort of a semi-role in a way, because I'm the announcer who sort of keeps the game together as all of the other antics are going on in the stands during the play. So I have the advantage of not having to memorize too much, which is a very good thing.
Because you can actually read it.
That's right. So I get to be the announcer and announce the game and what's happening on the field, because in the course of this production, there is a game going on. And it's sometimes hard to keep track of exactly what's happening on the field, because there's so many other conversations and antics going on in the stands.
And the field in this case is Chicago's Wrigley Field.
That's right.
Hence a game by the Cubs. And I introduced you earlier in the show as the consummate Chicago Cubs fan. And yet you come in here wearing a Chicago Bears t-shirt.
That's right. Yeah, no, that's, well, I am looking, I'm already looking forward to the football season. But especially considering what the Phillies are doing to the Cubs, this series that's underway right now. But no, that's one of the reasons why I really wanted to get involved is that I am, you know, such as it is, a diehard Cub fan, have been all my life. So it's fun. I mean, and the production is fun for that reason as well. So.
Les, as the director, did you pick Dan specifically for that reason for this role?
Because he was such a Cubs fan.
Yeah,
and he you know, he's a pretty good announcer.
He's got a darn good voice. Yeah,
he's a pretty good announcer. Yeah, and in fact, I wanted to get Dan a few years ago when we did it. I think the last time I asked Dan to do this, and because of circumstances or whatever, he couldn't do it at the time. So I had we had to settle for old Dave Lone over at WDWS, sports director over there.
Who we hope is listening to this.
Yes, right. Now, Dave's a friend of mine. Of course, did a great job. But I'm very happy to have Dan with us in the cast. This is our actually fourth time around for this show that we have done at Mike and Molly's. It's a great little place to watch a show like this. It's really a character study of about these six or seven people sitting up in the right field bleachers at Wrigley Field watching this Cubs-Cardinals game. Of course, the best rivalry in baseball, I think. They get very emotionally involved, and there's betting going on, and there's beer drinking being done, and all kinds of things like that. There's, of course, the older couple. There's the Rose and Zig couple. Zig's there at the game, and his wife has to catch up with him to make sure he doesn't lose too much money. There is the Marvin, the sort of the antagonist of the group, who takes the side of the Cardinals just because everybody else is a Cubs fan, just to keep them, you know, stirred up and riled up.
He's really out to make some money.
He wants to make some. Yeah, he wants to make some money
because the wagering that goes on in this show is such that you know, you have the loyal Cub fans who want to back their team no matter what, and so they tend to get a little over enthusiastic and overdo their wagers on the game. And of course, Marvin, the character that Les is referring to, is there to take advantage, every full advantage of the blind loyalty of the Cub fans, and make as much as he possibly can in the process.
And one of my favorite characters in the show is a character called Greg, who actually is blind, but sits up with the group anyway to just sort of take advantage of the of being out there with all the Cub fans and being there with the action. And it's a great show. It's a really nice character study, and it's a study on how really life is about the little things and that make up life that become very important in the moment, like a baseball game, and who's going to win and who's going to win this bet and who's going to win the game. And of course, it's a very exciting game. Dan calls it very well, and comes down to that last moment. Of course, I'm not going to tell you who wins or who loses, but you'll have to come and see it. No, can't tell you, Kevin. Can't tell you. You'll have to come and see it. But it's a really nice play, and it's a really great way to spend a couple of hours. Mike and Molly's setting is very nice. You know, it's kind of, I said, it's kind of like dinner theater, except with beer and popcorn. With your ticket price comes your first drink, albeit a beer or a soft drink, and we'll have free popcorn for everyone. And you can just sit and watch the play, and it's a wonderful little setting. And we really encourage you to do that. We've got a great cast, along with Dan. There are some regulars. If you're a community theater regular around here, you're going to recognize some of these names. Aaron Clark and Al Heckman is in the play. Dave Heckman, his son, too. Chris Harris, Barb Teteritz, a lovely gal by the name of Liz Pritchard plays our babe. She's the young lady that hangs out with these guys. Jeff Bossert, many people who listen to these stations might recognize that name. Jeff is a newsman here, and he does a great job with his part. Mike Galloway and his daughter Chandra Galloway, and of course Dan does the announcing for us.
And Les Schulte is the director. Are you also playing in this?
You know, I'm a little like Hitchcock in the sense that
you make a cameo.
I got to do a little show. I show up for one little scene. Yes.
And will you be disguised in any way?
Well, we'll see if the audience recognizes who is that guy anyway.
So this is your first time directing this show?
Yes, sort of. I say sort of because in a couple of renditions in the past, we've kind of self-directed ourselves, and I would be up and playing my part, and then I would run out and take a look at what the picture looked like, and then I would say, oh, maybe you ought to move there, and you ought to move there, and then I would run back up and, you know, play my role.
And have you directed things before?
I have, but it's been a while since I've done some directing, and it's been a lot of fun. It's been challenging. Again, my hat's off to the cast, because it's been sort of a long, hot rehearsal period, as sometimes summer shows can be, but they've been very dedicated. And I think anyone who comes out and sees the show is going to be very pleased and going to have a great time. Again, it's at Mike and Molly's. You can make a reservation. You can show up and buy your ticket, of course. But you can make a reservation by calling 355-1236. And their seating is limited, so you might want to do that if you're planning on coming either Friday or Saturday night.
So what happens if it rains?
Well, that's a very good question, Kevin.
Actually, let me see.
We're going to show up.
Yeah, I'll give the forecast in a couple of minutes. I won't give that away.
All right.
Because that'll happen in a couple of minutes.
It
but
will.
What does happen if it...
If it rains?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. We actually don't have a rain date planned because of the way our schedule
Well,
had,
you know,
had
Cub fans stick around no matter what. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I've been in the stands when it's been pouring rain before.
There you go, Dan.
You make the best of it.
So, Dan... What is it about the Cubs that inspires such loyalty? I mean, there is no other team in baseball that seems to do that in quite the same way, does it?
Well, first rule of thumb is you have to be able to deal with losing. That is the major qualification, because then you're always looking forward to the time when you're going to win. So if it's like I always tell my boys, you know, you go through tough times and you appreciate the good times. So you have to go through the tough times to enjoy the good times. The good times haven't quite gotten here yet for the Cubs, but it will. The time will come.
They've come very close in recent years.
Absolutely.
A couple of times, didn't they?
So like, it's just...
There's a line in the show, I think, that kind of sums it up where somebody says, I bet you think this is going to be the year. And one of the characters jumps up and says, yeah, I think this is going to be the year. That's kind of how Cub fans sort of sums it up for them, I think.
Yeah.
Every year you go into it. Yeah, I think this is going to be the year.
Yeah.
So you said what you need in order to be a Cubs fan, but why are there so many Cubs fans? What is it about the Cubs?
Well, as far all I know is my own history, and you know, my mom and dad are both diehard Cub fans their entire lives, and sort of raised us that way. And that's, I mean, and I think there are a lot of families that have sort of gravitated toward the Cubs, not only in Chicago, but nationwide. I mean, they have, if you watch games that's in Washington, the nation's capital, they just visited Washington, and there were at least as many Cub fans in the stands in Washington as there were Washington Nationals fans.
No kidding.
And so you find that all over the country. I don't know. I mean...
I like the way you put it. You know, we were raised that way, as opposed to we weren't raised that way to root for the Cardinals.
That's right.
Or,
well, you know. I come from a mixed marriage. I'm from St. Louis, so I'm a St. Louis fan, and my wife is from Chicago, and she, and of course my father-in-law, diehard Cub fans.
Very dangerous to have a Cardinal fan directing this.
Well, that's what, and you're sitting right next to each other.
I'm kind of skewing it a little one way or the other. That's right.
Well, we thank both of you gentlemen for coming on the show today. It's Bah Humbug Productions presentation of Bleacher Bums. It's going to be at Mike and Molly's Beer Garden, which is in downtown Champaign, Friday and Saturday night, 7:30. And if you want tickets, call Mike and Molly's. Reservations are encouraged, 355-1236. And they do say that the show is not recommended for children under 13. Anyone under 19 must be accompanied by a parent or legal guardian. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Appreciate your company today. And here is a look at that weather forecast. This afternoon, partly to mostly cloudy with a slight chance of a few showers or a thunderstorm, the high 75. Tonight, partly cloudy. Patchy fog forming overnight, the low 58. Tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny with a high of 81 degrees. And on Friday, chance of a thunderstorm after midnight.
Yay.
Saturday, slight chance of thunderstorms during the day.
Yay.
This is WYLL 90.9 FM and HD Urbana, operating translators W293 AF Danville and W266 AF Urbana.